Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Infinite Crisis Inmans.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And welcome to the... Ashley usually does the intro here. The Mind University, Ashley. Welcome to the Mind University.
Because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or comic book event from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about it in about an hour. And we have such tight intros like this because we're always focused.
Yes. So this is a little bit different than a normal episode.
What?
If you are a patron of ours, you kind of already know what's up. And thank you so much for your support over at patreon.com/Jawin. If you are not a patron, then you don't know what this is. So, Ashley, there's a little event coming up this year on the CW called the Crisis on Infinite Earths. What is that? What is that event?
Well, as we like to say on the podcast, Crisis on Infinite Earth is a very famous comic book event, the first comic book crossover, where they said, there's too many multiverses! And then they made one, because the Anti-Monitor ate a bunch of universes and farted one out. And to celebrate that, and to celebrate this lauded event, we have, for the last 11 months, done...
the whole year.
...a video docu-series behind our paywall on Patreon. We've also had special live streams and mailbag episodes, and we've sent out a bunch of cool swag. It's been a very interactive experience built with us and with our patrons.
It's been amazing. But I know what you're saying right now. Right now, somebody out there is like, what? If I listen to this on Patreon, like, I've already heard this. And then the other guy is saying, what? But... you mean like you made people pay for this, man? Like, that doesn't make sense. Well, neither of those are true. What you're going to hear right now is a basic highlight reel from episode 1 and episode 2 of Crisis Club. Now, this is an edited version.
It's about...
it's a half the length.
Yeah.
It's half the length of episode 1 is about over 30 minutes on Patreon. Episode 2 is over 30 minutes on Patreon. And this episode together is around 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you are getting basically a highlight reel because we put a lot of work into this. We're very proud of it. And we thought our podcast listeners would enjoy it as well as a good primer to the CW event. The Arrowverse event, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
And in fact, a lot of our patrons, when we started this, suggested that we release it in a public forum. But because our Patreon is very sacred to us and the people who support us there are so important to us, we are keeping a lot of the material with the original people who literally made this possible.
That's true. So if you like what you hear today and you're like, I need a little bit more Crisis Club.
There's literally hours more content.
You want to hear, seriously.
Yeah.
You want to hear the full unedited versions of these same episodes, then go over to patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, because not only will you get the full unedited versions, but you'll get other podcasts, and you'll get to join our club next year. We're doing another club, but...
which has already been announced on Patreon. They already know what it is.
But thank you to the suggestion from our patrons. Because of that, we're going to give you a taste, if you will, for the next 6 days, 7 days. I don't know how many it is. You're going to get a bunch of episodes about Crisis Club, and you're going to enjoy them. So here you go. Without further ado, here is...
Part one
of Crisis Club, covering Crisis on Infinite Earths issue 1 and Crisis on Infinite Earths issue 2. Hi, I'm Jason Inman.
And I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And welcome to Crisis Club. Yes, part one of Crisis Club. This is where the series that we're going to be diving into each issue of the famous DC Comics event, Crisis on Infinite Earths, because we're going to be looking for Easter eggs. We're going to be giving you theories all leading up to the giant DC TV crossover,
Crisis on Infinite Earths.
This video will only really make sense if you've read Crisis on Infinite Earths. So if you haven't, we have lots of links around. We have links on our Patreon. We have links on our website. We have links on our Twitter, links on the YouTube. So go to those links, get your copy
of Crisis on Infinite Earths. A little bit comes back to the Mind University, but also so you can read along, because we will be referring to direct pages
and panels
in this.
Yep.
And in this. Real quick note, we're going to say this in front of every video. If you have not read Crisis on Infinite Earths, you definitely need to read Crisis on Infinite Earths, or this video is not going to make any sense. So there's going to be plenty of spoilers for a comic book series that was published in 1985.
You're welcome.
So, Ashley, this is Crisis on Infinite Earths. We're going to start with issue one. It was called The Summoning. Mm-hmm. It was written and edited, interestingly. He edited himself, Marv Wolfman, the creator of the new Teen Titans.
Oh, there's a debate to be had there.
Yes. It was penciled by the wonderful George Perez, mm-hmm. inked by Dick Giordano, lettered by Tony Tomlin, and then also the plot was by Wolfman, Robert Greenberger, and the astounding Len Wein.
That's right. May he rest in peace.
This was published in April of 1985. Now, Ashley, you got a little bit of production history for us, I know.
I do have a little bit of production history. So, Marv Wolfman talks a lot about what led him to Crisis on Infinite mm-hmm. Earths, and it starts when he was a little tiny human wanting to write comic books, much like you and I and most of the people who
well,
are...
not that tiny.
Well, you were tiny once.
Sure.
Who are here supporting us in Crisis Club. And when he was a tiny human, he wanted a character who was omnipotent and all-powerful, and mm-hmm. he called him The Librarian, which I have to say, I think is an awesome name.
Unlike the Noah Wiley show.
Yes. And his idea was that the librarian, because a librarian is control of books, would be able to control all of these comic book heroes. Then many moons later, he got to write for DC Comics.
Many worlds later.
Many worlds later, that rose and fall. He was in a position where he was going to be writing Crisis on Infinite Earths, and he needed a character to fill that role, and mm-hmm. he returned to the idea of the librarian, changed the name, mm-hmm. made him a little scarier, gave him a weirder haircut, and that became the Monitor.
Now, there is some stuff to lead up into Crisis on Infinite Earths. The original title of Crisis on Infinite Earths was called History of the DC Universe. Mm-hmm. Now, the big reason why it was called History of the DC Universe is because 1985, the 50th anniversary of DC Comics.
Yeah.
So now, Marv says this specifically, and I'm going to quote Marv. He said, part of the pitch of Crisis was that it was going to be from January 1985 to December of 1985, the whole 50th anniversary year. Mm-hmm. Then in January of 1986, we were supposed to start every book new with a number one. And Marv Wolfman says that he fought for that so long. But Dick Giordano, who was the editor-in-chief at the time, in his autobiography said that the only mistake he made in his entire career at DC Comics was they didn't do that. But Dick Giordano said that he regretted doing that, but the reason that they didn't do that is because at the time, as editor-in-chief, he didn't think that they actually had a good enough talent pool to recreate every title from scratch.
Ooh, that's rude!
Yep.
I wanted to say that DC has had several reboots since Crisis on Infinite Earths kind of opens the door for this.
Mm-hmm.
And several times they've stated that they are starting over from one. They never do.
No.
So I just think it's interesting that not only does the history in the event mm-hmm. repeat itself, but the meta narrative of like we're starting over again
yeah.
also repeats itself every time.
All right, so let's jump into issue one. So if you're reading along, you want to pick up your copies, guys. First off, we got to talk about issue one, the amazing double page spread cover by George Perez. I love this image of all the worlds being crashed together. We got a couple of Supermans on there. Ashley, George Perez.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on George Perez? Not too shabby, huh?
George Perez, one of the all-time best, arguably the best comic book artist of all time, certainly depending on your taste.
That is an interesting argument to have one day.
For my money, best comic book artist of all time, because there is he has a unique style. He changed the house style, and so many people have been copying him ever since. I think he draws
I did a brief check in my head. I kind of think you might be right. I think he beats Kirby. The other person that stood out in my head was John Byrne.
Uh-huh.
I think he beats John Byrne. He's just so versatile. Every George Perez image you see, you're just like, wow.
And one of the things that George Perez does so well is everyone has a unique face.
Yep.
A lot of artists have stock faces. He doesn't repeat faces very often. I think he draws the best women's hair in all of comic books.
Especially Scarlet Witch, yeah.
Oh my God, his Scarlet Witch. Go check out his Avengers run when you're done with Crisis on Infinite Earths. My favorite character on this double page spread is Blue Beetle because his anatomy is out of control.
Oh, it's all good. All right, so let's move on into, on the very first page, we get this thing of, we get to see the multiverse being born. And I think, you gotta talk about George Perez's amazing art. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really cool thing to see.
To me, it looks very Kirby influenced, mm-hmm, you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier.
All right, so we go into this giant sequence. We're in Earth 3. We meet Pariah. Now, Pariah is a very important character for Crisis on Infinite Earths. His real name is Kel Massa. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna find out that he's a scientist. You're gonna learn more about him as Crisis goes on, so I don't wanna give it all away right now. I wanna leave a little surprise there.
Do we think he looks like Dr. Doom with the cloak? Whenever I see him, I'm like, is Dr. Doom in this book?
A little bit, but he's basically just a big crybaby. But the interesting thing is that we start this story on Earth 3. Ashley, what is Earth 3? Do you know what Earth 3 is?
Earth 3 is classically the crime syndicate Earth.
It's the evil Earth,
which Flash has made jokes about several times.
Yep. Ultraman, Owlman, Johnny Quick, Superwoman, and the hero of Earth 3 is Alexander Luthor. Now, there is an interesting note from Marv Wolfman. Marv Wolfman says, and I quote, after the first issue came out, Alan Moore, writer of Watchmen, wrote a fan letter to me. He wrote it personally, so I didn't publish it in the letter columns. But he's the only person who ever got why the story begins with the death of the villain Earth, DC, which had Ultraman and Power Ring and a bunch of the evil characters. It's because they were supervillains who were villains, but they were also Superman, they were also Batman, and they were also Green Lantern. They were evil. So I decided to get rid of them on page one because the real Superman, the real Batman, and the real Wonder Woman would not appear together in the book until about 5 to 6 issues in.
Yeah.
So this was his kind of like, hey, readers, don't worry. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are here.
I also think it's a nice story because we think of Alan Moore as being a crazy wizard who lives up on a rock somewhere. Mm-hmm. And to know that he geeked out as hard as we do about this is really sweet. And Power Ring is my favorite alternate name for Green Lantern.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, we see Alexander Luthor. He looks like a NFL Super Pro, if you get that Marvel Comics reference. Ashley, I want to talk about, there's this sequence here, and they homage Action Comics number one, where Jor-El and Lor-El are, you know, zipping Kal-El off into the universe. And Lois is the wife of this hero, Luthor. Now, this is classically a thing that you see in DC Comics, is that, you know, Luthor has a crush on Lois. What'd you think about Earth 3 and this, like, zipping the baby off and doing the homage?
It's fun because it's tough to want Lois and Lex to be together because mm-hmm. Lex is so very evil. It actually reminds me a lot of Red Sun, where they sort of have a relationship for a little while.
Do you think it was an intentional, again, this is the 50th anniversary year, Action Comics 1?
I think this is 100,000% an intentional homage to the first, and I mean, again, one of the greatest DC comic stories of all time.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Of course, we get the sad death of, you know, Ultraman, but I want to move ahead in the story, Ashley, if it's okay, to the introduction of Harbinger.
There's
a big double page spread. We're on the monitor's weird little satellite. We get to meet Harbinger, who's named Lila Michaels. Well, interesting. Here's the interesting fact about this. This is not Harbinger's first appearance.
Is it not?
No. Harbinger's first appearance is actually in New Teen Titans Volume 1, Annual Number 2 in 1983, two years before Crisis.
But she is a Wolfman Perez invention because they're the dream team on New Teen Titans.
This is not the first appearance of Harbinger because, again, we're going to learn that Marv Wolfman, as reading New Teen Titans, he didn't know if he was ever going to get to do Crisis.
So he does a lot of crazy things.
So he just started inserting the characters, mm-hmm. and it was the idea that if he ever got to it, he could use them.
Which is interesting to me when you look at the character design where we see her in this double page spread. She kind of looks like a mix between Starfire and Raven aesthetically. So that's really cool.
I like and hate her design.
I'm mixed about the design as well, yeah.
It's very 80s, but like it's also very striking.
It's gorgeous.
Yes.
It's stunning.
So now we get through this thing where we're hopping through time periods and locations. We get to see Gorilla City. We get to see the 30th Century Legion of Superheroes. We get to see 1942 World War II. Mm. Ashley, was this the point where I was like, oh man, this story's getting big. What did you feel about this jumping all over the place?
I think it's effective because it lets you know that the impact is going beyond just
the entire
Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, like you talked about before, because for me picking this up for the first time, like I wasn't too familiar with the All-Star Squadron section of characters. And I think having them in juxtaposition to the Legion characters, these far-flung future characters, we're seeing that the impact of this is going to be so great, which I mean, of course, we know now going back and looking at it, but it's a really clever way to plant in the first issue that this is not only all of space, this is all of time
as well. All of time and space. You know, we get to meet Firebrand, but we get to also talk about your favorite Blue Beetle, Ashley.
Ted Kord! Ted Kord. I love Ted Kord so much. He is my favorite Blue Beetle. Mm-hmm. I loved seeing him, and I forget in the classic design that his goggles look like a bow tie.
Yes.
I also love that we get to see him here. He's a very classic, capable hero. We're not to the Bwahaha Ted Kord just yet.
No, that comes after Crisis.
Yeah.
But we need to talk about a character that's going to be very important, basically, for the next almost 20 years. Psycho Pirate.
The Golden Mask.
His name is Roger Hayden. Fun fact, after this series ends, he's going to be one of the few characters in the DC Universe that actually remembers Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Yes.
He can always remember it. Let's talk about, Ashley, we get a little scene with Firestorm and Killer Frost in this issue.
Yes, we do. And it's the classic Firestorm. It's Ronnie Raymond, white guy mm-hmm. Firestorm. So this is actually the second Killer Frost, mm-hmm. whose name is Louise Lincoln. She is a Firestorm character.
Yeah.
Killer Frost has always been a Firestorm character.
Yeah.
She only debuted in March of 1984. Like a year before this, because before then she was a character called Crystal Frost, and they updated her, and then they'll update her again when we get Caitlin Snow. I think they're going to be important.
All right, now I know we're skipping over a lot of the characters, but that's because we're going to go to the giant big page spread of all of the characters on there. You basically see this entire weird team. Of course, there's Dawnstar there, there's Geo-Force there, there's Cyborg there, John Stewart Green Lantern mm-hmm. is there as well.
There's Obsidian,
who is the son of Alan Scott. There's a couple people in there I want to mention. There's a big guy that kind of looks like he has Galactus horns. You might not know who that is. That's Dr. Polaris.
Mm-hmm.
That is Neil Amerson. He's a Green Lantern villain. He actually later gets a really cool costume. Also, actually, there's a very, very, very important character in this two-page spread. A character that is specifically in the story because of the 50th anniversary of DC. You might notice that this Superman has gray hair.
Oh, yeah.
That is because this is the Earth 2 Superman. Now, Ashley, do you know what makes the Earth 2 Superman unique from the Earth 1 Superman?
Is he the original Superman?
He's the original Superman. He is the Golden Age Superman, because on Earth 2, it's the idea that time has progressed mm-hmm. in real time. So this is a Superman that has been Superman since 1935 for 50 years.
And he's a little tougher around his edges than our Earth 1 Clark.
I think he does that, but he kind of comes off a little bit more grandfatherly.
Yes.
But there's several mentions in this book of the characters being like, why does Superman look so old?
Like Reed Richards, I mean, honestly.
But I love Earth 2 Superman. And again, this is on point. Like this is the Superman from Action Comics number one.
Which is, you know, the second homage that we have mm-hmm. to the first ever DC superhero story.
Now, we get a little brouhaha here where they fight shadow creatures. They're going to fight a lot of shadow creatures. But we're going to skip
yeah.
right to the last page of this issue, the reveal of the Monitor. Now, I love his costume.
Do you?
I do. It's very 80s, but like, It's something about the color design. I just like it. I really, really like it.
Every George Perez design is striking.
Yeah.
It is the matte grading rule. If you put all of these characters in silhouette, you can tell exactly who they are. My deal with the Monitor is his facial hair creeps me out.
Oh, his little sideburns?
Beyond all reason, it is weird mohawk, but I think he feels, for a nerd character, mm-hmm. kind of punk. Like, he's kind of rock and roll.
Also, this is not the first appearance of the Monitor. As I said before, in New Teen Titans Volume 1, Number 21 in July of 1982.
There you go. So I hope if you have not read New Teen Titans, you'll go and do that after Crisis Club.
All right, so there is the first issue of Crisis on Infinite Earths. So I actually tracked down the original issues of Crisis.
Yeah, Jason went above and beyond.
And I read
research.
This. Fun fact, there is a mail column. In issue one, there's a mail column. They call it Crisis Mail. And a lot of the mail column is it's this big essay by Marv Wolfman talking about the creation of Crisis. But this is 1985 Marv Wolfman. This is Marv Wolfman when it's fresh.
Yep.
And he brings up some ideas, and he basically, like, a lot of it's an apology letter being like, DC fans, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We're not going to ruin everything. So he talks about that. He says that the whole reason why Crisis came about was, he said, about 4 years ago, this is Marv Wolfman's words from the mail column, 4 years ago with a letter I printed in Green Lantern number 143 from Michigan fan Gary Thompson asking about an apparent mix-up in DC continuity. At the end of my explanation, I said, one day we, meaning the DC editorial we, will probably straighten out what is in the DC universe and what is out the DC universe. And he claims that that is the genesis, the birth. Yep. That letter is the birth of Christ on Infinite Earth. Also at this time, I don't even know, DC was also publishing Who's Who yep. in the DC Universe because they were using that gentleman's, I forgot his name already, Pete Sanderson, they were using his notes to make Who's Who.
And I think this is a really great example of listening to your fans. It's yep. always tough with how much you want to go back and forth on that as a major publishing company, but I think them listening to that letter, taking it to heart, Marv pushing this idea for years and years yeah. and years, is really good. He also talks about in the introduction to this new collection of Crisis that he had always pitched this as a limited series, and that DC wasn't sure at the time if a limited series 6, 12, 18 issues would work because they had 50 years of continuity, mm-hmm. of roving continuity that was really exciting for them, and that this was a big experiment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this kind of is the first universe-wide crossover. It really mm-hmm. is. I mean, there's nothing that compares to this before. All right, so Ashley, overall thoughts on issue one of Crisis on Infinite Earths from a modern perspective?
I have to say...
We have to couch it that way, obviously.
Of course, because it's 2019. When I was reading this, I was sitting next to you, and a few pages in, Wolfman and Perez books are always comforting to me, even though
okay.
I just love them so much. And I think it's because I do hold New Teen Titans in such a special place. But even though there's a lot of words on the page,
yeah.
and especially in this, because we are setting up so many moving parts
yeah,
that are
yeah.
just going to be going forward, there's a lot of words on the page. But I think it rocks.
Okay.
I loved it from the first issue. Is it weird? Yes. Does it feel like a product of the time? Absolutely.
Of course. It's definitely an 80s comic.
Is everybody's hair too big? Yeah. But I really enjoyed this first issue, and all of the setup has made me so excited to jump into the future issues.
Yeah.
How about you?
I felt the same way. I really enjoyed this first issue. Now, the thing I enjoyed about it, though, is because I know a lot of DC continuity,
uh-huh.
you cannot... I don't know. I think this can definitely not be your first DC comic book.
No, absolutely not.
It needs to be... Once you've been reading DC comic books for about 4 or 5 years, then read this. Or you've been watching the TV shows for about 4 or 5 years, then read this. But just going off of issue one, like, this just does not, like, work for a fresh face. But as a person who loves DC continuity, I really do. I do love DC continuity. I love DC continuity way more than I love Marvels. And I'm sorry, I'm just saying that out there. Because
yeah.
I love the multiverse, and I love the weird Earths, and I love that we have old Superman, there's a cowboy world and a prehistoric world and talking monkeys. I love that. I love that stuff. Because that embraces the zaniness of comic books that I think make comic books so great.
Yeah.
And this is everything about that. And it's like, I gotta gather the team. It's interesting, I noted that we have seen this sort of omnipotent figure gather the team from different time periods in so many other stories.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't until I reread this issue that I was like, oh, this is everybody plagiarizing Crisis One.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to talk about Secret Wars.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to talk about some other comic book issues that tie into this. Now, this comes from the official Crisis on Infinite Earths companion. Mm-hmm. They published their official timeline. So if you read Crisis number one, now, it's my opinion, you do not need to read these side issues, but if you want to, they're collected in the fandom. So this is the reading order. You read Crisis on Infinite Earths number one, then you read All-Star Squadron 50, All-Star Squadron 51, All-Star Squadron 52, Fury of the Firestorm 41, Infinite Inc. 18, Detective Comics number 555, and Green Lantern volume 2 number 194. In that issue, Harbinger picks up Jon Stewart.
Literally?
I mean, you know, with her heart.
Oh.
Yes. So there you go. There are some tie-ins if you want to do. All right, now we're going to go into issue 2 of Crisis on Infinite Earths. Here are the credits. It was called Time and Time Again. It was written and edited by Marv Wolfman, penciled by George Perez, inked by Dick Giordano, lettered by John Costanza, colored by Anthony Tullin, and the plot was by Wolfman, Robert Greenberger, and the amazing Len Wein. This was published in May of 1985. Now, first off the bat, Ashley, let's talk about this George Perez cover. Heavily features a shadow creature, but also first little heavily detailed anti-monitor tower, which is going to become
uh-huh.
a staple of the DC Universe going forward, that every time you see an anti-monitor tower, whoa.
I just want to say that I'm not a fan of the shadow creatures, and they're pretty
I don't like them either.
Heavily featured, but the use of negative space in this mm-hmm. cover and the way it's composed as a non-artist, I think is just stunning. I'm probably going to say that about every cover, but it's amazing.
It's also, these covers are pretty, pretty amazing, and also you have to put out that Commandy the Last Boy
Jason loves Commandy.
On the cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little shout out there. But we start the issue not with the last boy. We start the issue with the first boy. If you don't know who this is Anthro, the first boy, basically a prehistoric boy, the opposite of Commandy. His first appearance was in Showcase number 74 in 1968.
Woo!
Now, Ashley, I want to talk about this because we spend about 3 to 4 pages in this sequence with his prehistoric tribe.
Yes.
What do you think about this? Was this interesting? Because we just ended the last issue of Crisis with, I am the monitor and you shall protect the world. And then we go right to prehistoric times. Do you think this is more setup? What do you think the idea is to start in prehistoric times?
It's definitely setup.
Okay.
This is a big picture. This to me recalls the beginning of the last issue where we began on Earth 3. Yeah, like we're just showing how far the consequences of this are going to go.
Yeah.
Did I like starting with Anthro? Not so much.
Well, you got beef with Anthro?
I do got beef with Anthro. I think he's not interesting.
He's a prehistoric boy, Ashley. He doesn't know your advanced ways.
That's fine. I still don't think he's interesting. To me, the best part of the Anthro storyline is when we hard cut to the Legion.
Oh, yes. Well, talk about juxtaposition.
Yeah, exactly.
So Anthro sees a city from the 30th century, which is the home of the Legion of Superheroes, and the Legion of Superheroes see a pack of woolly mammoths.
Yeah.
And Fred Flintstone driving by.
I actually think when you get the reveal, I think it's very intelligent to be like, these two things in opposition are smashing together.
Yep.
Because of how loose the fabric of reality and of the multiverse is. And I love a good classic Brainiac 5 with the swoopy Dick Grayson hair.
Well, Brainiac also gets a little nice moment in here where he sees this wave of antimatter
mm-hmm.
that is coming from everywhere and is hitting every time period, which of course is the main crux of Crisis on Infinite Earths. But we gotta talk about, it's not a crisis, weirdly. Now, and I know you're gonna say this is weird, but every crisis almost always has a scene with the Joker. And here is the Joker.
Well, because, you know, everyone loves the Joker, right?
Well, but here's the thing, Ashley. This is the Joker before the Joker was so overused.
I know.
This actually, to be honest with you, is my favorite Joker. I love this classic Silver Age design.
Purple Joker?
Purple fedora.
Yeah.
Purple long trench coat. It works. And his hair is a little bit longer,
mm-hmm.
like the crazy Peter Capaldi years from Doctor Who, if you understand that reference.
There is a panel on
Neil Adams.
On page 4 that's yep. just the face against a white background, and mm-hmm. it's one of my favorite pieces of iconography of the Joker. He looks great
yep.
here.
This is my favorite type of Joker, so I don't mind the Joker being in here. But we get a scene on the next page. Batman sees a sort of hologram image of Barry Allen screaming, save us, save us, uh-huh. save us. Now, this is the first time in Crisis, this is the first time in DC Universe continuity that a sort of dying Flash has been seen, and this moment has been aped by so many writers for the next 30 years.
Including in the Justice League movie.
Yes. Fair point. Whoa.
Not even Justice League. Batman v Superman.
I didn't even consider that.
Was the second I saw that, I was like, oh, look at the DCEU copying this.
Them some brains over there.
And it's, you know, because he's like, oh, I came too far back. And the reason people copy this is because it's cool. And this is pre-Speed Force.
There's also pre-Barry Allen's death.
Yes.
I mean, well, spoilers.
I'm sorry.
I'm not going to spoil that. It's kind of like knowing that Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. I think kind of, to me, to be honest with you, I think the one thing that everybody knows about Crisis on Infinite Earths is that Barry Allen dies.
Yeah.
So,
but it's effective and it's cool. And not only is the time traveling here, but you can literally see the effects of Crisis on him. He
yes.
is disintegrating and falling apart.
Yes.
And it's tragic.
Now, again, this is an amazing piece of foreshadowing to something that's not going to take place until, I believe, issue 11?
10 or 11.
Of the 12 issues of Crisis. But we have to talk about this. There's an editor's note where Batman goes, the Flash, but he disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
It says, see the Flash number 350 for details. Now, what that is that Flash 350, I read it for you, don't worry. The Flash basically is the last issue of the Flash in that volume. It's where Barry decides to go live in the 30th century with a newly resurrected Iris, away from the heroes and away from being the Flash. Now, that issue, funnily enough, is published in October of 1985.
After?
So, after this issue. So, people If you were reading The Flash and you're reading Batman at this time, and Batman goes, "The Flash disappeared," you're probably like, "What is he talking about?"
Yeah.
You know?
Can you just imagine you reading a comic and you just throw it across the room?
Well, at the time, it's like...
They're on 342!
Continuities were totally way off the gate.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And to be honest with you, I kind of wish we go back to that. I don't need every one of my comic books to line up perfectly. But I just wanted to point out, that's basically what happens in that issue. It's the final issue of that volume.
Thank you.
We go to this amazing George Perez spread, where we get to see all of our characters sort of introducing it, mm-hmm. which to me, it's weird. I think about that giant spread, that to me is like a Legion of Superheroes thing. That's what I think about it.
It is a very classic Legion of Superheroes
trope.
You
got so many characters, we got to name them all to make sure the readers, and then basically, the monitor gives you the 411 about all the stuff like that. There's going to be earthquakes. There's going to be volcanoes everywhere. Cats and dogs living in peace. All kinds of stuff like that. There's a couple mentions here. There's a couple characters in here we did not talk about last time. We got to talk about Simon.
I hate Simon.
He's kind of a Teen Titans villain. And yeah. Also, we should also mention Geo-Force a little bit more, who is now a big star because of Young Justice.
Geo-Force.
Yeah. But also, we have one crony from Marv Wolfman's other tenor, New Teen Titans, Cyborg.
I love Cyborg.
Let me ask you a question. So this is our main crisis team.
Yes,
this is going to be our main crisis team going mm-hmm. forward. What do you think about the mix here? It's a very eclectic mix. Also, let me ask you this question, Ashley. Why do you think Cyborg is the only Titan? Because at this time, the New Teen Titans, best-selling DC comic book.
Absolutely. And it was for about 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a very interesting lineup because in a lot of ways, especially like the characters you just pointed out, these are some of the greatest hits
mm-hmm.
as created by Wolfman and Perez. I think...
Batman. Notice that.
No Batman. Because it's not all Batman.
There's no Bat character in this entire lineup. That would not happen today.
There'd be at least two of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was intentionally something that we see a lot of today. I think this is supposed to be a diverse lineup.
Yes.
And I don't even necessarily...
And also representative of the entire DC universe.
I was going to say, I don't even necessarily mean like from an ethnic or a racial standpoint, mm-hmm. but like we have heroes, we have villains, we have people from different time periods, we have people from different teams. This is not just the Justice League Light. This is not just Teen Titans Redux.
Yep.
We have someone from every corner of the DC
universe.
Several
villains.
At this time.
Yeah, as well.
Now, awesomely, it actually is diverse from like an ethnic racial standpoint for the time.
Yeah.
And I think that that's intentional. And I think that's why Cyborg.
All right, cool. All right, so we move on into where they start splitting apart. By the way, we should mention, we finally get to see Earth One, Batman, and Superman uh-huh. talking on the planet, and they meet Pariah, who, of course, his character's going on. But
I want
to skip to cutting right to the Great Disaster and the Anti-Monitor Tower
mm-hmm.
that is going to be this iconic thing. Look at the level of detail on this Anti-Monitor Tower.
I want to live in it.
And we meet, of course, that we saw him on the cover, Commandy, the last boy. Commandy. I love Commandy. He's a Jack Kirby character. He's the last boy on Earth because on Earth now they're all filled with talking animals. And he got his name because he lived in Command D Bunker.
I like that he wears jean shorts in the future.
Yeah, well, you know, they're comfortable. So he is here. I think this is a great thing.
I like that he sees this tower and he's like, I'm gonna climb it.
He gets a nice little moment with Earth 2 Superman. And he's like, oh, Superman? He's like, he's a little bit, older. So Harbinger, we go back to the Monitor's Tower. Harbinger walks in and sees Alexander Luthor, who now looks like he's maybe about five.
Yeah, four or five.
And he has some sort of weird cosmic-y powers. And we get the confirmation that Alexander Luthor has survived the little... rocket blast that we had.
His Action Comics number one adventure.
Yes, and he's actually going to be like integral to the DC Universe for days. We go back to another multiversal Anti-Monitor Tower with Obsidian, Arian, the Atlantean guy?
I would say Arian, but I've literally never heard it said out loud. Sorry.
Ashley, do you know who he is?
I know he is an Atlantean. I always say not in the traditional sense because we do see him more on land than underwater. And I know he is a relative of Arthur Curry.
Yeah, he's like a long, long...
Distant.
Yeah, I don't think there's a direct blood connection, actually. I think it's like second cousin. Like, he would be connected. But he's called a Homo Magi.
Mm-hmm.
He's a demigod. And he's one of the nobility of Atlantis when Atlantis was on land.
Mm-hmm.
And in sort of modern days, he's sort of become a villain. Like, he's become uh-huh. a villain in several modern storylines because the idea that, like, he somehow travels through time, right? And then he's like, Atlantis sank! Ah!
Every time he does magic, he gets the little sigils around his hand.
Yes.
And he kind of has that same Doctor Strange slash Hellblazer design trope. Do you like him as a character?
I do. I like modern one, but I forgot to mention his first appearance was in Warlord. Great comic book. Number 55 in March of 1982. So we get to see Psycho Pirate is kidnapped. He is blasted away. Mm-hmm. And he is kidnapped by the Anti-Monitor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And we get the first sort of cameo. We don't get to see him.
I know.
We get the cameo from the Anti-Monitor. I love this. Like, if you wish to live, let me know. Okay, how do you think the Anti-Monitor speaks?
I think the Anti-Monitor sounds like Michael Ironside speaking through a toaster.
So like, if you want to live, let me know, but to live you must serve as I demand.
Yeah, kind of like
your
that.
Your answer now. We've seen the Anti-Monitor actually already. He was in the Green Lantern animated series.
I know, he corrupts my favorite character in that universe.
Actually, okay, so Psycho Pirate is a big part of this story. Psycho Pirate is a big part of this issue. By the way, his first appearance is in All-Star Comics number 23 in 1944.
Whoa, that's so interesting because
he's a Golden Age character.
So many of these characters are recent additions. There's a lot of 80s
John
characters
Stewart,
here. So I think that's
Cyborg.
Fascinating.
He's an old
he's
school.
He's a classic because I've thought he was created for Crisis on Infinite Earths.
I did too.
He might have just been a character who was a one-off. Psycho Pirate, terrible name.
Terrible costume.
Terrible name. The mask is good.
Yes.
And by the end of this, he is a really interesting character.
Yes.
I don't know if he ever transcends this story and these events. I don't know if he ever gets another story that's as good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the purpose of what we're doing, I think he's an interesting choice to be, I guess I'll call him the agent of the Anti-Monitor, because I can't.
Well, he's not the only agent, as we're going to learn.
Yes, but spoilers for a 30-year-old comic series. I think he's an interesting choice, because at this point, who cares about Psycho Pirate, right?
Well, we learn that, we get a little mention that Harbinger was raised by the Monitor. And then we get this thing where we see that the Harbinger is also an agent of the Anti-Monitor.
Ah.
The Anti-Monitor says this scary, like, the Monitor will fail. I'm going to find the voice. Don't worry about it.
He'll get it. I'm not worried.
So that's a pretty big twist.
Bummer!
And the issue ends with this amazing kind of 80s George Perez cosmic-y face thing, which I love. Ashley, what do you think about this twist that Harbinger now works for the Anti-Monitor? And now, I mean, to be honest with you, we're only two issues in. This is the end of the second issue. And it feels like the Monitor's just going to get his ass handed to him.
This is a monumental twist to drop in the second issue.
Yeah.
Because if this were happening now, we would have this in issue 4 or 5. But by the time we get to issue 4 or 5, there's so much other stuff to be dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
When I first read this, I was really upset because I like Harbinger. Mm-hmm. Now, we knocked her costume because her costume's a little ridiculous in the last episode.
It's just because it's a little dated.
But Harbinger is a really cool cosmic character.
Yeah.
And to know that like she's basically a baddie is kind of a bummer. But I think the Monitor's got some tricks up his sleeve. I think he's going to be okay.
All right. So that's the end of the plot line of the issue. Remember, I talked about that I've tracked down the original issues. Mm-hmm. So Marv Wolfman, apparently, while he's waiting for letters to come in, just like was basically just in the letters page was saying crisis mail. And he was basically assuring all the DC Comics fans that they weren't going to screw up.
I get it. This is your first event of this kind. People were probably like, what?
So he drops some interesting nuggets in this letter column. And in the issue 2 Crisis Mail, he talks about how they decided who they would kill. And this is interesting because this is before they've killed anybody.
Yeah.
So he talks about, this is from Marv Wolfman's own words from the Crisis Mail in issue 2. He says, and I quote, Len, Bob, and I were asked to prepare a death list that would include all the heroes / heroines / Earths that would be changed, altered, die, given new costumes, given new powers, less powers, and on and on. We did so, trying to be as daring as we could. In fact, we added in some characters that we knew would be automatically shot down. No way would DC let us change him or her. Wrong again. We gave the list to our editors, Dick and Jeanette, and Jeanette asked us to be even more daring, making us to make some insane choices that you eventually see in the story that you will read.
And there is this is, again, not a spoiler, because we all know the two major deaths in the story.
Supergirl, Barry Allen.
There is a I don't know whose handwriting it is, but there's a handwritten note that says, that's in all of the big collection that says, can we kill Supergirl?
Yes.
And it's written out by hand, because someone probably wrote it and was like, no way.
Yeah, it's like on a memo know that they were given an inner office memo.
Because if we know anything about the DC Universe, who's unkillable? It's the Kryptonians.
Mm-hmm.
So, spoiler alert, yes, you can.
I don't know, but I will say overall, I think Barry Allen's the big one. Like, he's a title member of the Justice League.
I just mean, like, those two moments are defining, and for such a long time, they were considered the most important things these characters ever did was die.
So it's very interesting. I wonder who they thought that they were like, we're being daring, and their editors were like, nah.
Yeah, I wonder.
You know, I wonder if they're like, the new Titans.
I'm trying to think of who all dies. I'm sure we'll get
I mean, there's a whole bunch of deaths. We'll get to
it. Yeah.
Okay, so officially, let's go into other reading. So if you are reading along with this, this is the official list from the Crisis on Infinite Earths Companion. So if you read Crisis number 2, your next batch of issues should be in this order, and that is Justice League of America number 244, Infinity Inc. number 19, Batman number 389, Detective Comics number 556, Batman number 390, Detective Comics number 557, Batman number 391, Detective Comics number 558. Most of those are just red skies up here in them.
Yes, but, and the red, can we talk about the red skies?
Let's talk about that real quick. So yeah, you can go explain it.
Sure. So back in the day, Marv Wolfman had to send memos.
Yep.
And he sent a giant memo to basically everyone concerned who was working at DC on these comics or things that could potentially tie in at the time. That was a style guide on how to write or craft your story that tied into Crisis on Infinite Earths. And just as a quick shorthand for all of us readers out there, he suggested red skies. Red skies mean crisis. Everyone said yes to it.
Yeah, because red skies happened in Crisis on Infinite Earths. And so he made that. He said he did that originally in one of the background materials of the books because he thought he was worried that nobody else would connect to Crisis on Infinite Earths, that all the other writers would be like, eh. But he actually said that he found out that everybody wanted to be a part of it.
So a lot of these books that Jason is listing for you and that we're recommending that you want, if you want to read more, are
you
just
don't have to read them.
Regular issues with red skies, but they technically tie in from that standpoint.
Now, I know we didn't give our overall thoughts about the issue, but this Crisis Club's kind of gotten long, but it doesn't matter. So thank you so much for watching. Thank you for watching episode 2 of Crisis Club, talking about issue 2 of Crisis on Infinite Earths. Thank you to all of our patrons over at patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. They are the ones that made Crisis Club possible, so our big thanks to them. No worlds died in this issue, no worlds lived in this issue, and basically everything's still the same, basically on our end. So I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
Crisis Club!